Hi, can you hear me? I'm delighted to be reading at O'Vale. It's a wonderful, wonderful series, and I'm glad that it's. I'm going to start by reading a very, very short poem from my new and selected, and I'm just going to time myself. Actually, I forgot to turn on the thing. So this is actually a found poem. I don't often write found poems, but it's taken from an article by which I read in the New Yorker about the people who actually I'm not going to explain it. I'll just read it because it spoils in a way to explain it. It's called The Golden Gate, Crossing the Cord. I instantly realized that everything in my life that I'd thought was unfixable was totally fixable, except for having just jumped. So those are the words of a guy called Baldwin, who actually survived the jump from the Golden Gate Bridge and lived to tell the tale. And it really struck me at the time. Apparently, there was something like 12,000 people at the time. That was 2003, who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. This is another poem. I should mention, you know, the reason I selected and yeah, this one is called Holes, Holes, Holes. He told me about the hole he'd fall into, how dense and impervious it was, composed of stuff that no knowledge or chemical dissolved. It didn't matter that he was a doctor or that he knew he'd clamber out sooner or later. The hole was a compact singularity, dependable as hell. There was his surgery every morning and evenings, fortified with conversation and a few glasses of good wine. Whenever he'd feel the ground give way, he'd check himself into St. John of God's, a doctor who found himself in a room with no door handle, another kind of hole. Friends, for a while, we fell out of touch for years. When someone told me they'd seen him looking unwell, I dropped a postcard in his letterbox and we met in a pub nearby. He had lost his practice and practically everything else, including the woman he'd been engaged to. Candid and gentle as ever, he seemed to want nothing more than to be left to walk his dog, Annie, on the pier. Being a doctor, he knew how to make one clear exit, an express lift, through the dark to the bright center of the earth. He took it eventually. I met him. I miss him. Would another card or call have helped? Better, I think, to return the spontaneous hug he once surprised me with. How many of us are in less lethal, more permanent holes, ones that are apparently invisible, whose sides are wallpapered with windows, clouds, streets, a walk with a dog on the pier, another round. And this one is called The End, Etc. 22nd, 1844. As Reverend Miller's disciple had predicted it would. We are living in its aftermath, along with all the other Millerites who suffered through what became known as the Great Disappointment, to regroup later as the Adventists, then the Seventh-day Adventists, who now have a worldwide membership of 20 million souls. The human mind is a stepped-on that miraculously unsquishes itself to invent Braille, write a brief history of time, or develop a new material, something that will prove impervious to the slightest trickle of doubt or the weight of a toddler's sandal, which is the weight of the world insufferably carrying on. Two endings in memory of Anthony Glavin. It's been playing in my head all morning, last night's dream, in which I am spending time with Anthony, my older friend and mentor, talking about nothing serious, neither of us rubbing each other up the wrong way. I don't often meet Anthony in dreams, though his presence is always to hand, humorous, stern, standing behind me, ready to hijack the mouse and hit delete, like the time he handed back my first MS, divided into two A4 envelopes, the slimmest one titled Possibly With More Work, and the other twice as thick, Flogging a Dead Horse. He was someone you could call in the small hours to hear that steadying voice. It's all right. It's only a panic attack. You're not going to die. When emphysema imprisoned him, I carried a pager for emergencies, worries, frettings. On my second date with the woman I'd marry, apologizing for abandoning her in the cinema as the lights dimmed for the man who wasn't there. I wasn't the night he died in the matter, 6 months after his heart-lung transplant. I'd witnessed the post-op surge of possibility. His voice returned, his hope for 3 more years, enough time to finish his long poem, travel to India, then the rapid slide, his exhausted, brittle body rejecting me for good. I hadn't seen him in weeks and wasn't prepared for his appearance. Huddled in a low-lit room, unmoving, a big tube in his side. Did I say something lame? Did I even speak? He shot me one withering glance and turned to the wall, and that was it. Nothing can dream away that look. I can only ward it off. With an afternoon years earlier in St. Michael's, when they had to put him back on the ventilator. I'll be right here, he said, pressing my forehead, quoting E.T., his light touch, commonplace, real, as sunlight on a stripped bed, that indelible smile. To know, but we're afraid to ask. So it's called Everything You Always Wanted to Know. At 15, I found Burt Reynolds in my mother's bed, stowed under her pillow in a Cosmo centerfold. Impossibly hairy, recumbent on a bearskin rug, a chewed cigarillo between his lips. He was grinning, happy to be discovered, even as I slid him back where I'd found him, like the miraculous medal she'd hidden under my mattress, like the legion of things that will never be spoken, and what will remain unsaid about the convent girl who'd strayed enough to give birth to 2 children, how she found ways to widen a single bed and kick her cold Catholic hot water bottle onto the floor. V-Day, this is called. I may as well say it stands for Valentine. V-Day, patron of beekeepers, epileptics, and what stuck, that risky body double tucked into an outsized Xmasy card, a bunch of sugary cellophaned flowers in their watery pouch. A celebration of the flip side would make more sense. The saint of what remains and the ache begins to subside. The lachrymose pillow is punched aside, and you finally wake to, hey, it's hole in a heart but a clean wound day. The verdict on Chagall. I should mention that the first two lines are a quote from the German authorities, who oversaw Chagall's art. His art was obviously degenerate art at the time. So the German authorities, the new German authorities, as they were called, made this judgment, and that's in quotation marks in the first two lines. So the verdict on Chagall: green, purple, and red Jews shooting out of the earth, fiddling on violins, flying through the air. In the words of the new German authorities, you can hear an attempt to scribble over this assault on poor Western civilization, as if it were the victim that must barricade itself from time to time in panicky walls, lest it become submerged in stained glass aquatic light, greens, purples, reds, moons afloat, lovers and cows, villages with yellow rooms you can swim through, surfacing without breaking the surface, if only you step out of these bloodied and soiled clothes into your first skin, the one that never learned how to be terrified by a lack of gravity. Okay. So, Pinball Wizard. At 15, I was on top of the world, prizing loose big wedges of scree to watch them wobble like liberated wheels down a hill in West Cork, fascinated as each fractal of landslide gathered momentum to topple and finally die in a minuscule field. I freed and followed its progress as it crashed over rock, tore through heather, gorse, and a grove of saplings to slice an unerring dark line across bright bracken till all that barricaded my missile that half collapsed, but held, and it hit me. This is called Marvelous. And again, I'm keeping in mind the fact that we're in this this recognition of mental health. Marvelous. Another filthy night in a week of gales, our big sash windows rattling so hard I had to wedge bits of cardboard between their frames. The doorbell might have been going for some time before I noticed. I thought it must be my aunt, come down from her upstairs flat to look in on my mother. A stranger stood there, a man in a yellow anorak, wet hair flat on his skull, clutching in his left hand a paper bag, his face bearded and solemn, the eyes meeting mine head on or staring through me. The voice clear, urgent. You think you're marvelous. You think you're marvelous. You think you're marvelous. Monotonous, but with feeling. A needle dropped in the midst of a record, skipping, repeating, scratching my lame response. I'm sorry, but I think you have the wrong. You think you're marvelous. You think you're marvelous. You think you're marvelous. This is for you. He was holding towards me the crumpled paper bag that might have contained a half-finished takeaway meal or a bunch of severed fingers. His other hand was in his anorak pocket, gripping something more dangerous? No. He seemed like Beckett's Neary, 100% harmless. On his locked stare, I closed the door. Standing in the narrow hall, I heard the theme tune, my mother settling in for Coronation Street. Along our rain-lashed avenue, a fellow human was on the loose, somewhat lost, wandering house to house with his paper bag and scrap of a message, a torch with a faltering battery, a missed connection sparking into the future, becoming something else, our rickety old flat in that period house, decades before we left. My mother, alive with her arthritis, our cat, Claire, asleep on the TV, me still standing there, as if I had just stepped in, having traveled miles through the corrosive dark. This is for you. This is quite a different poem called Customs. And there are five customs mentioned. And I'm not going to tell you which ones are real and which ones are made up. You can guess. Customs. Where I come from, buildings are circular because the devil conceals himself in corners. Where I come from, Talking to oneself is a certified sign of sanity. Where I come from, when the moon is full, we leave out a saucer of milk in case the moon people are thirsty. Where I come from, we prefer to point with our lips. Where I come from, we set aside a day to unbury the dead, hold them above our heads, and dance. This is one of those poems that stems from a question. The question was one of those questions that people ask from time to time, or at least a sort of a riff on that kind of question. Anyway, it's called Place of Worship. When somebody asked if poetry is a broad church, I thought clouds had been known to nest in the vault and, depending on where you stand, either altar or narthex is well over the horizon, or the whole thing could be comfortably stowed in the shell of a narrow-mouthed whorl. No, and yes. This is one of those awkward, difficult forms of villanelle. Though I have to say, I find villanelles, I wrote a couple of them recently, I find them easier to write than Sestinas. Sestina is a bloody killer. Anyway, the villanelle, this villanelle is called Which Service, which is an American question that you get when you dial the, well, the equivalent of 999 over here. They ask you, the operator asks you which service, and you say the police or whatever. Which service? This isn't an occasion for light verse. Millions have suffered an insult to the brain. Call the ambulance. No, make that a hearse. Of course, the situation could be worse, and democracy go chuckling down the drain. This isn't an occasion for light verse. His fans may go on chanting or disperse, but there's no vaccine for this native strain. Call the ambulance. No, make that a hearse. We don't need the makings of a curse when the wounds are self-inflicted. Yet again, this isn't an occasion for light verse. The eyes are empty, the mouth an open purse that never could be snapped shut. There's no gain in calling an ambulance. Make that a hearse. Deep in his own tremendous grave, the earth's a furious shitstorm. No need to explain. This never was an occasion for light verse or calling an ambulance. Here comes the hearse. This is a little thing I decided to add. I don't know if it's even a poem, really. It's another found poem, I suppose, but it's selections from a letter, and it was published in an article called A Splendidly Uncivil Servant by Stan Gebler Davis in The Independent in March 1993. So I took liberties and I published excerpts, and then the last few lines are my own. But the rest is all I call it Letter from the Keeper. St. John's Point Lighthouse, County Down, 9th of August, 1950. 2, Engineer, Irish Lights Office, Dublin. Sir, I have to report the painter, B. Bean, absent from his work all day yesterday and not returning to station until 1:25 a.m. He is willfully wasting materials, opening drums and paint tins by blows from a heavy hammer, spilling the contents, which is now running out the paint store door. His language is filthy, and he is not amenable to any law or order. He mixes paint, etc., with his bare hands and wipes off nothing. Empty, stinking milk bottles, articles of food, coal, ashes, and other debris litter the floor of the place, which is now in a scandalous condition of dirt. He is the worst specimen I have met in 30 years of service. I urge his dismissal from the job now, before good material is rendered useless and the place ruined. Your obedient servant, signed, D. Blakely. After which, B. Bean was retained by Irish Lights for another summer, which may have surprised D. Blakely, who had done his best to ensure that this specimen never again darkened the door of a lighthouse. See how long I've got left, actually. I'm trying to time myself, but my phone switches itself off. Okay, I've got time, I think, for about one more poem. A poem called Heavens. Simone Weil thought humans don't have the power to travel in a vertical direction, but should keep one eye on heaven and wait for God to pick us up, like a parent on a school run. Auden designed his paradise meticulously, down to landscape, means of transport, interior decor, and statues, only famous defunct chefs. According to the Catechism, a state of supreme and definitive happiness, the goal of the deepest longings of humanity, migration to the great pleasure center, warm heart of the hive, fanned by wings. Do you want to be happy forever and ever? Bliss without end. Amen. Talking Heads might be nearer the mark, the place where nothing ever happens, but at least there's a party. Our deepest longings, swarming us into burning walled cities, 4 a.m. bars, any place to muffle that scratchy little voice, unbearable as tinnitus. Who or what kind of contraption am I? And why do I want what I really, really want? Maybe it's where good jokes go after they die. The Tommy Cooper kind, a few simple props, the timing perfectly imperfect, right to the last. Everything is prepared. There is no excuse. I come with my big dumb suitcase, bulging, haphazardly packed, and would like to go somewhere, take the scenic route, the blue highway, from here to here.